Thanks, Jen. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. On Fridays, we speak with Alexander Zalbin. He is the managing editor of Decider.com. And boy, does he know his TV. How are you, Alex? Nice to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you again. Thank you for the plug. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And finally, all three of us together again. Either
it's
I'm off or
a year.
You're off or Bill's
yeah,
been here.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a long
but
time.
Because there's been no TV. There's been no TV in the intervening time. They just kind of put it on hold. So
in the absence
good.
Of this segment, TV decided to just wait? That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, this has been the biggest story in TV for the last week or so. We've not talked to you since the story broke, but let's talk a little bit about the circus surrounding what's going on at Saturday Night Live and the cast member mm-hmm. who was only a cast member for 4 days, Shane Gillis. What's your take on all this?
He said some absolutely awful things rather recently. For those who weren't paying attention to the story, he is a Philly-based comedian who had a podcast. He said some incredibly racist things on the podcast, and this wasn't a podcast from 5 years ago or 10 years ago or anything that potentially makes it iffy in the current realm of things. It was in, they discovered clips from last September and then back May of this year, where he was saying not just racist jokes, but unfunny racist jokes that were very hacky, very bad. People got very upset, and in a surprising move, frankly, SNL cut him. I say it's surprising because usually SNL and Lorne Michaels, as producer in general, will just double down or ignore these things and weather it out. They'll have the person go on Weekend Update, make a joke about it, and they kind of move on from there. But here, the public outcry was so big, SNL, the Monday afterwards, said, we thought about it, we talked to him, and the way they framed it is, we've come to a mutual decision to let him go. It's our fault. We didn't vet him enough in the process. I have my own suspicions about what's going on, but that's the rough rundown of the situation.
I have to be honest with you. We discussed this prior to the firing, and I did not think SNL was going to back down. I really didn't. I was surprised mm-hmm. to hear that they let him go. I think a good decision.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you guys, this is my, based on no inside information, complete conspiracy theory, but just having followed how SNL acts about these things over the course of the years, my bet is it's mostly about the fact that Shane Gillis didn't play ball with the PR department. He sent out a note very quickly on the Notes app that was very dismissive of the whole controversy. He seems like the sort of comedian that would say, hey, I go my own way and say my own thing. And that's not what SNL does, particularly from the PR perspective. They control every part of the message. So again, complete conspiracy theory, but my guess is they wanted him to do certain things that he didn't want to do, and so ultimately cut him because of that.
Alex, over the years, Wendy and I have had many cast members and writers from Saturday Night Live on with us, and they all tell a similar story about how before the season begins, everybody shows up a couple weeks early and just starts banking material for the upcoming season. Do you know if Shane Gillis had already been part of that? Had he already been up at 30 Rockefeller Center and interacted with the other cast or not?
I'm sure he had meetings about that, but the whole thing happened so quickly that I don't believe he had made it to any sort of point of anything. You know, certainly he met with Lorne Michaels, he auditioned for the show, but as it is, it was announced on a Friday and he was cut on a Monday, so it was a very quick turnaround.
Would things have played out any differently if he had been on the show for a while? Wendy and I discussed this yesterday. Mm-hmm. If he had been a cast member for 4 or 5 seasons and people already kind of knew him and knew about him, would this have been played out any differently, do you think?
I think absolutely. I mean, they've shown, as I mentioned earlier, I think just a different willingness for cast members to immediately that Saturday throw them on Weekend Update and make a joke about it versus dealing with it in any sort of tangible way. I mean, frankly, Michael Che, who's one of the head writers now of the show, has said some very controversial things that people have gotten very upset about, but he brushes them off, the show ignores them, and they kind of move on from there.
What was the city? I'm trying to remember. Michael Che picked out some city. Was it Baltimore that he was?
That sounds right.
Was ridiculing a year or so ago? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's every sort of circumstance would have been different. If it was closer to the season, they might have even made a different decision. But as it is, I think they had enough time and enough wiggle room that they didn't need to have him there. The second part of the story, which we actually reported on here at Decider, one of our writers, Claire Spellberg, wrote this up, is that they specifically picked him to be a conservative comedian. And as far as insiders described it, there was much less of an audition process for him than there usually is for a Saturday Night Live cast member. So I think that may have been part of it as well, is they were looking for a specific thing from him. He was not providing immediately what they needed, and so they got rid of him because of that as well.
I kept thinking about the awkwardness. You know, he had done a thing on his podcast where he was talking about the triangle of comedy in America, and he put white males at the very top and white females at the very bottom, and he explained the various levels of this pyramid, and he was talking about how white women in America just plain aren't funny, and then all of a sudden he'd be thrown on a show with Kate McKinnon and so many other very talented women.
Cecily Strong. I mean, Edie Bryant. How could he have said that and expected to play well with others?
Yeah.
You guys know from the comedy background that there's a lot of men in comedy who are exactly like that,
yeah.
Strongly believe that and act like that all the time or think it's funny. They think it is a funny joke to say, haha, women aren't funny. But Saturday Night Live is a team. You know, it's not individuals coming in there and popping out. You're working insanely long hours, sometimes 24 hours a day with these people. You have to be able to work with them on a base basis and respect all of them. Conflict, sure, you know, that's part and parcel of having a job, but you can't go in there like that and expect it to work. And it's also entirely possible some of the cast members spoke out about him and said, no, I'm not going to work with this guy.
Interesting. Alexander Zalbin's our guest. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. We're going to take a quick break and then more with Alex, 312-981-7200, if you have any comments or questions. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin. He comes by on Fridays and we talk about television. Big weekend for TV, Alex. The Emmy Awards are on, but without a host. Mm-hmm. No host.
No host. No host happening this year. They are too busy. There are too many big programs ending, like Game of Thrones, The Good Place, that they want to pay tribute to, so they have decided to not have a host. Also, it hurt the Oscars in absolutely no way to not have a host.
I know.
So I think that helped that decision there as well.
I don't like that. I want there to be a host. Don't you, kind of?
Mm-hmm. I personally like having a host. It is a thankless job. It is a completely thankless job. Everybody focuses on the host. Everybody hates it. I'll tell you why. One of our writers, Kayla Cobb, had a truly hilarious story that we published earlier today where she suggested the Masked Singer should host the Emmys this year.
Yeah.
You have somebody in costume. Yeah. You're guessing who they are the entire time. It would make the whole thing enthralling.
The Masked Host. Is that what it would be? All right.
Yeah.
So some guy's on stage, he's dressed like a unicorn, we have no idea who it is, you can't tweet anything bad about him because you're not sure if you like him or not. I like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm sold. Yeah.
And at the end it turns out to be Bill Hader the whole time or something like that.
God, I love Barry. I can't wait till that's back in action.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good show. Between Two Ferns, can I just say I'm pretty excited about this? Is it out? Has it dropped?
Yeah, this is on Netflix today. This is Between Two Ferns, the movie. It is a movie-length version on Netflix of the web show. It's Zach Galifianakis. After accidentally, temporarily killing Matthew McConaughey, he's sent on a cross-country journey to do 10 episodes of Between Two Ferns so that he can get a nationally syndicated talk show. It's, according to our reviewer, Anna Menta, it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't want to spoil all of the cameos, but one famous couple makes an appearance that will have you laughing in tears, and so many more. It's very silly. There's not much of a plot. It's mostly improvised, but it's a ton of fun.
I think once Barack Obama was a guest on that, on Between Two Ferns, it established the fact that he can get anybody to be on that show.
Yeah, it's actually truly incredible. And again, Anna's been doing some great reporting on that. She interviewed Scott Aukerman, the director, and it turns out for a lot of the interviews, they'll just say, hey, can you do this? Can you be on set tomorrow to do this? And the celebrities will say, sure, I love that show. Sounds great. And then suddenly they're in the movie. So to your point, that sort of faith has really been built up by Galifianakis and company building a really funny, really incredible web show over the years.
Excellent.
I wonder if that celebrity couple is Roseanne Barr and Andrew Dice Clay, because I know they're hitting the road together. And the Connors.
Oh, I don't want to spoil it.
All right. The Connors good. The Connors season 2 is happening, and according to Decider.com, it's not just good, it's like, it's
quotation marks
yes,
good?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from our reviewer, Brett White, who checked out the first two episodes. What he said about it, and we talked about this a lot over the past year or so, is the first season was really dealing with the loss of Roseanne, what was going on with Roseanne, kind of feeling itself. And he feels like these first two episodes back are what the Conners always should have been. It's just an uproarious, well-written, smartly acted show that's a lot of fun to watch. So if you're looking for a good classic sitcom, you can definitely check out The Conners.
What is, I know Netflix has a series on called Criminal, but all I know is the title. What can you tell us about the show Criminal?
It's a little bit of a tricky, interesting concept. It's 12 episodes, but it's divided into four parts. So essentially, it's four different shows. Each one has a different cast. Each one is filmed in a different country and a different language by a different crew. It's only linked by the fact that there is a cop and a criminal in every episode. The one that will probably interest people the most, at least English-speaking people, is the one that was done in the UK. It's with David Tennant and Hayley Atwell, and it's them going head-to-head during an interrogation. So that one, at least, if you're fans of those actors, should be fun to watch.
So kind of an anthology series, like true crime, but not really. I mean, it's a variation on the theme, right?
Yeah, it's a little closer. I don't know if you've ever seen Room 104 on HBO from the Duplass brothers, which is, it started as a horror anthology all in one hotel room, but other than that, not connected at all. It's the same sort of thing there, except this time with an interrogation room.
Disenchantment has its second season. I have to be honest, I didn't know they had a first season.
Me neither.
What is Disenchantment?
So this comes from Matt Groening, who did The Simpsons, who did Futurama. This is his chance to do a fantasy-based animated comedy, but not exactly the twist, but the difference here is it's very serialized. So unlike The Simpsons, where things reset at the end of every episode, Futurama had a light sense of the characters continuing. This is full-fledged characters developing going on. The first season was a bit of a mixed bag, but it really kind of figured out how to be itself by the end of the first season. This one is a rough going at the beginning, but according to our reviewer, Kayla, it gets much better as going on. So if you're looking for a silly fantasy animated comedy this weekend, that's on Netflix right now.
A lot of the network news shows are premiering this week. One of them, Prodigal Son, looked good to me, and then I found out that the lead in it is the guy who played Jesus on The Walking Dead, Thomas Paine. Wendy and I had him in studio about a year and a half ago. Really good guy. Was Prodigal Son a good show or not a good show?
I'll tell you what, I had a ton of fun watching this one. It premieres on Monday at 9 p.m. on Fox. As you said, it stars Tom Paine. His father is Michael Sheen. It's basically like Hannibal, but with a father and son. So his father was the serial killer back in the day. He becomes an NYPD criminal psychologist. He has a course to work with his father on various mysteries. It's very procedural. It's very gory, but it's also very funny at the same time. I think particularly if you're a fan of The Blacklist, you might enjoy this one a lot.
So even though his dad was a serial killer, they still let him help out with the cases?
I cannot tell you how much it is straight up Hannibal, where he's in the glass cage at everything. His son is coming up, insulting with him, and doing the whole Clarice thing that's going on. So it's a ripoff of a million different things, but Michael Sheen is great. Tom Paine is great. As I said, very gory, very funny. It's just a good time with a procedural.
All right. Speaking of serial killers, just got caught up on season two of Mindhunter. I highly recommend that if you haven't seen it. That's on Netflix. Love that. And speaking of gory, I was telling you this off the air. The Preacher may have lost me. There are only two episodes left. It is just going crazy weird.
That last episode, the episode that aired last week, I think for a show that is gory, that might have been the grossest episode of all time. So I'm right on the same page as you. Certainly with two episodes left, I'm going to stick it out and see what happens. But there was vomit, there was blood, there was urine. It was
green room here at WGN.
Yeah.
I've watched The Preacher. And I've seen like gory, crazy stuff. I almost just stopped watching. But two left, got to do it.
Mm. The thing that was tough about it, too, coming from the comic book fan perspective, is a lot of that stuff was directly out of the comic. But in the comic, when you're looking at Steve Dillon, who did the art, it is funny, it is gory, it is over the top. But once you translate it to real people and real situations, yeah, it just becomes uncomfortable to watch.
Alex, thank you for your expertise. We will check in with you a week from today. Thanks so much.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Alex Zaldman, the managing editor of Decider.com. That's the website, Decider.com. A break and then some news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.